Welcome to Keith Knight, Don't Tread on Anyone. This is 12 Times the Lockdowners Were Wrong by Phil Magnus of the American Institute for Economic Research. Before getting into his 12, let's just review the general narrative that if there are mask mandates, more people will wear masks, and this will lead to a decrease in cases, then we will eventually get rid of the virus. That is not what has happened virtually anywhere. If we look at Austria, where masks were required, we later saw a drastic increase in cases. We saw the same thing in Germany. If you look at the numbers there, again, these are per million. Of course, there are differences in population. In France, they had a mask requirement and later a significant increase in cases. Spain, same thing. United Kingdom, same thing. Belgium, same thing. So again, I'm not saying there is no virus. I'm just saying the existence of a virus doesn't justify lockdowns and doesn't justify an increase in state power any more than it justifies, you know what, there's a terrible virus, therefore Russia has the right to rule America. Well, no. Just because there's a virus in America doesn't mean the government has the right to rule peaceful individuals. Italy, same thing. Even if you look within European countries, areas that required masks versus no mask requirement, there is not a direct correlation, which you'd think there would be if you listen to Fauci and the lockdowners. Even though you have very high mask compliance in these areas, you can see the same thing within America. California requires masks and later sees an increase in cases. Hawaii requires masks both indoor and outdoor at different periods in the year 2020. And there was still an increase if you look at Texas versus Georgia, where there was a mask requirement, whereas in Georgia there was not a mask requirement. You don't see the correlation we were promised. You can even look at cases per million from Texas, Georgia, New York, and Sweden, and you don't see the correlation that they use as a justification for increasing state power. Back to the article. 12 times the lockdowners were wrong. Number one, Anthony Fauci says lockdowns are not possible in the United States, January 24th. When asked about mass quarantine containment efforts underway in Wuhan, China back in January, Fauci dismissed the prospect of lockdowns ever coming to the United States. That's something that I don't think we could possibly do in the United States. I can't imagine shutting down New York or Los Angeles. But the judgment on the part of the Chinese health authorities is that given the fact that it's spreading throughout the provinces, it's their judgment that this is something that in fact is going to help in containing it. Whether or not it does or does not is really open to question, because historically when you shut things down, it doesn't have a major effect. Less than 2 months later, 43 of 50 U.S. states were under lockdown, a policy advocated by Fauci himself. Number two, U.S. government and World Health Organization officials advise against mask use February and March. When mask sales spiked due to widespread individual adoption in the early weeks of the pandemic, numerous U.S. government and World Health Organization officials took to the airwaves to describe masks as ineffective and discourage their use. Surgeon General Jerome Adams tweeted against masks on February 29th. Anthony Fauci publicly discouraged mask use in a nationally broadcast 60 Minutes interview on March 7th. At a March 30th World Health Organization briefing, its director general supported mask use in medical settings, but dissuaded the same in the general public. By midsummer, all had reversed course and encouraged mask wearing in the general public as an essential tool for halting the pandemic. Fauci essentially conceded that he lied to the public in order to prevent a shortage of masks, whereas other health officials did an about-face on these scientific claims around masking. While mainstream epidemiology literature stressed the ambiguous nature of evidence surrounding masks as recently as 2019, these scientists were suddenly certain that masks were something of a magic bullet for COVID. It turns out that both positions are likely wrong. Masks appear to have marginal effect at diminishing spread, especially in highly infectious settings and around the vulnerable. But their effectiveness at combating COVID has also been grossly exaggerated, as illustrated by the fact that mask adoption reached near universal levels in the U.S. by the summer, with little discernible effect on the course of the pandemic. Number 3, Anthony Fauci's decimal error in estimating COVID's fatality rates, March 11th. Fauci testified before Congress in early March, where he was asked to estimate the severity of the disease in comparison to influenza. His testimony that COVID was 10 times more lethal than the seasonal flu stoked widespread alarm and provided a major impetus for the decision to go into lockdown. The problem, as Ronald Brown documented in an Epidemiology Journal article, is that Fauci based his estimates on a conflation of the infection fatality rate and case fatality rate for influenza, leading him to exaggerate the comparative danger of COVID by an order of magnitude. Fauci's error, which he further compounded in a late February article for the New England Journal of Medicine, helped to convince Congress of the need for drastic lockdown measures while also spreading panic in the media and general public. As of writing, Fauci has not acknowledged the magnitude of his error, nor has the journal corrected his article. Number 4. 2 weeks to flatten the curve, March 16th. The lockdowners settled on a catchy slogan in mid-March to justify their unprecedented shuttering of economic and social life around the globe. 2 weeks to flatten the curve. The White House COVID Task Force aggressively promoted this line, as did the news media and much of the epidemiology profession. The logic behind the slogan came from the ubiquitous graph showing 1. A steep caseload that would overwhelm our hospital system, or 2. A mitigated alternative that would spread the caseload out over several weeks, making it manageable. To get to graph 2, society would need to buckle up for 2 weeks of shelter-in-place orders until the capacity issue could be managed. Indeed, we were told that if we did not accept this solution, the hospital system would enter into catastrophic failure in only 10 days, as former DHS pandemic advisor Tom Bossard claimed in a widely circulated interview and Washington Post column on March 11th. 2 weeks came and went. Then the rationale on which they were sold to the public shifted. Hospitals were no longer on the verge of being overwhelmed. Indeed, most hospitals nationwide remained well under capacity, with only a tiny number of exceptions in the worst-hit neighborhoods of New York City. A U.S. Navy hospital ship sent to relieve New York departed a month later after serving only 182 patients, and a pop-up hospital in the city's Javits Convention Center sat mostly empty. But the lockdowns remained in place, as did the emergency orders justifying them. 2 weeks became a month, which became 2 months, which became almost a year. We were no longer flattening the curve, a strategy premised on saving the hospital system from a threat that never manifested, but instead refocused on using lockdowns as a general suppression strategy against the disease itself. In short, the epidemiology profession sold us a bill of goods. Number 5. Neil Ferguson predicts a best-case U.S. scenario of 1.1 million deaths, March 20th. The name Neil Ferguson, the lead modeler and chief spokesman for Imperial College London's pandemic response team, has become synonymous with lockdown alarmism for a good reason. Ferguson has a long track record of making grossly exaggerated predictions of catastrophic death tolls for almost every single disease that comes along, and urging aggressive policy responses to the same, including lockdowns. COVID was no different, and Ferguson assumed center stage when he released a highly influential model of the virus's death toll forecasts for the US and UK. Ferguson appeared with UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson on March 16th to announce the shift toward lockdowns. With no small irony, he was coming down with COVID himself at the time and may have been the patient zero of super spreader event that ran through Downing Street and infected Johnson himself. Across the Atlantic, Anthony Fauci and Deborah Brick cited Ferguson's model as a direct justification for locking down the U.S. There was a problem, though. Ferguson had a bad habit of dramatically hyping his own predictions to political leaders and the press. The Imperial College paper modeled a broad range of scenarios, including death tolls that ranged from tens of thousands to over 2 million, but Ferguson's public statements only stressed the latter, even though the paper itself conceded that such an extreme, worst-case scenario was highly unrealistic. A telling example came on March 20th when the New York Times' Nicholas Kristof contacted the Imperial College modeler to ask about the most likely scenario for the United States. As Kristof related to his readers, "I asked Ferguson for his best case, about 1.1 million deaths," he said. Number 6. Researchers in Sweden use the Imperial College model to predict 95,000 deaths April 10th. After Niall Ferguson's shocking death toll predictions for the US and UK captivated policymaker attention and drove both governments into lockdown, researchers in other countries began adopting the Imperial College model to their own circumstances. Usually, these models sought to reaffirm the decision of each country to lock down. The government of Sweden, however, had decided to buck the trend, setting the stage for a natural experiment to test the Imperial model's performance. In early April, a team of researchers in Uppsala University adopted the Imperial model to Sweden's population and demographics and ran its projections. The result? If Sweden stayed the course and did not lock down, it could expect a catastrophic 96,000 deaths by early summer. The authors of the study recommended going into immediate lockdown, but since Sweden lagged behind Europe in adopting such measures, they also predicted that this best-case option would reduce deaths by only 30,000. In early June, when the 96,000 prediction was supposed to come true, Sweden had recorded 4,600 deaths. 6 months later, Sweden has about 8,000. A severe pandemic, to be sure, but an order of magnitude smaller than what the modelers predicted. Facing embarrassment from these results, Ferguson and Imperial College attempted to distance themselves from the Swedish adaptation of their model in early May. Yet, Uppsala's team projections closely matched Imperial's own UK and US predictions when scaled to reflect their population sizes. In short, the Imperial model catastrophically failed one of the few clear natural experiment tests of its predictive ability. 7. Scientists suggest that ocean spray spreads COVID April 2nd. In the second week of the lockdown, several newspapers in California promoted a bizarre theory. COVID could spread by ocean spray, although the paper later walked back the headline-grabbing claim. It is outlined here in the Los Angeles Times. According to this theory, initially promoted by a group of biologists who study bacterial infection connected to storm runoff, the COVID virus washed down storm gutters and into the oceans, where the ocean breeze would kick it up into the air and infect people on the nearby beaches. As silly as this theory sounds, it helped inform California's initially draconian enforcement of lockdowns on its public beaches. The same week that this modern-day miasmic drift theory appeared, police in Malibu even arrested a lone paddleboarder for going into the ocean during the lockdown, all while citing the possibility that the ocean breeze carried COVID with it. Number 8. Niall Ferguson predicts catastrophic death tolls in U.S. states that reopen May 24th. Fresh off their exaggerated predictions from March, the Imperial College team led by Niall Ferguson doubled down on alarmist modeling. As several U.S. states started to reopen in late April and May, Ferguson and his colleagues published a new model predicting another catastrophic wave of deaths by midsummer. Their model focused on 5 states with both moderate and severe outbreaks during the first wave. If they reopened, according to the Imperial team's model, New York could face up to 3,000 deaths per day by July. Florida could hit as high as 4,000, and California could hit 5,000 daily deaths. Keeping in mind that these projections were for each state alone, they exceeded the daily death toll peaks for the entire country in both the fall and spring. Showing just how bad the Imperial model was, the actual death toll by mid-July in several of the examined states even fell below the lower confidence boundary of its projected count. While COVID remains a threat in all 5 states, the post-reopening explosion of deaths predicted by Imperial College and used to argue for keeping the lockdowns in place never happened. Number 9. Anthony Fauci credits lockdowns for beating the virus in Europe, July 31st. In late July, Anthony Fauci offered additional testimony to Congress. His message credited Europe's heavy lockdowns with defeating the virus, whereas he blamed the United States for reopening too early and for insufficient aggressiveness in the initial lockdowns. As Fauci stated at the time, if you look at what happened in Europe when they shut down or locked down or went to shelter in place, however you want to describe it, they really did it to the tune of about 95% plus of the country did that. The message was clear. The United States should have followed Europe but failed to do so and got a summer wave of COVID instead. Fauci's entire argument, however, was based on a string of falsehoods and errors. Mobility data from the U.S. clearly showed that most Americans were staying home during the spring outbreak, with a recorded decline that matched Germany, the Netherlands, and several other European countries. Contrary to Fauci's claim, the U.S. was actually slower than most of Europe to reopen. Furthermore, his praise of Europe collapsed in early fall when almost all of the lockdown countries in Europe experienced severe second waves, just like the lockdown regions in the United States. Number 10. New Zealand and Australia declare themselves COVID-free August to the present. New Zealand and Australia have thus far weathered the pandemic with extremely low case counts, leading many epidemiologists and journalists to conflate these results with evidence of their successful and replicable mitigation policies. In reality, New Zealand and Australia opted for the medieval Prince Prospero strategy of attempting to wall themselves from the world until the pandemic passes, an approach that is highly dependent on their unique geographies. As island nations with comparatively lower international travel than North America and Europe, both countries shut down their borders before as of yet undetected virus became widespread and have remained closed ever since. It's a costly strategy in terms of its economic impact and personal displacement, but it kept the virus out, mostly. The problem with New Zealand and Australia's Prince Prospero strategy is that it's inherently fragile. All it takes to throw into chaos is for the virus to slip past the border, including by accident or human error. The heavy-handed lockdowns ensue, imposed with maximum disruption at the spur of the moment in a frantic attempt to contain the breach. The most famous example happened on August 9th when New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern declared that New Zealand had reached 100 days of being COVID-free. Then just 2 days later, a breach happened, sending Auckland into heavy lockdown. It's a pattern that repeated itself every few weeks in both countries. In early December, we saw a similar flurry of stories from Australia announcing that the country had beaten COVID. 2 weeks later, another breach occurred in the suburbs around Sydney, prompting a regional lockdown. There have been embarrassing missteps as well. In November, the entire state of South Australia went into heavy lockdown over a single misreported case of COVID that was mistakenly attributed to a pizza purchase that did not exist. While both countries continue to celebrate their low fatality rates, they've also incurred some of the harshest and most disruptive restrictions in the world as all the result of premature declarations of being COVID-free, followed by an unexpected breach and another frantic lockdown. And Australia is where you can actually go to jail for making a Facebook post opposing the lockdowns or government measures. I am going to skip number 11. Number 12, Anthony Fauci touts New York as a model for COVID containment June to December. By all indicators, New York State has suffered one of the worst coronavirus outbreaks in the world. Its year-end mortality rate of almost 1,900 deaths per million residents exceeds every single country in the world. The state famously bungled its nursing home response when Governor Andrew Cuomo forced these facilities to readmit COVID-positive patients as a way to relieve strains on hospitals. The policy backfired, as most hospitals never reached capacity, but the readmissions introduced the virus into vulnerable nursing home populations, resulting in widespread fatalities. To this day, New York intentionally undercounts nursing home fatalities by excluding residents who are moved to a hospital from its reported numbers, further obscuring the true toll of Cuomo's order. New York has also fared poorly during the fall second wave, despite reimposing harsh restrictions and regional lockdown measures. By mid-December, its death rate shot far above the mostly open state of Florida, which has the closest comparable population size to New York. All things considered, New York's weathering of the pandemic is an exemplar of what not to do. Cuomo's policies not only failed to contain the virus, they likely made it far more deadly to vulnerable populations. Enter Anthony Fauci, who has been asked multiple times in the press what a model COVID response policy would look like. He gave his first answer on July 20th. We know that when you do it properly, you bring down those cases. We have done it. We have done it in New York. Fauci was operating under the assumption that New York, despite its bad run in the spring, had successfully brought the pandemic under control through its aggressive lockdown and slow reopening. One might think that the fall rebound in New York, despite locking down again, would call this conclusion into question. Not so much for Dr. Fauci, who told the Wall Street Journal on December 8th, New York got hit really badly in the beginning, but they did a really good job of keeping things down, and still, their level is low compared to the rest of the country. And a few dishonorable mentions. Dr. Fauci admits to misleading the public on health information. White House Wuhan Coronavirus Task Force member Dr. Fauci admitted in a recent New York Times interview that he has been changing the numbers on herd immunity for the public based on a gut feeling. Americans can now handle the truth from the story. Bolding is mine. Recently, a figure to whom millions of Americans look for guidance, Dr. Anthony S. Fauci, an advisor to both the Trump administration and the incoming Biden administration, has begun incrementally raising his herd immunity estimate. In the pandemic's early days, Dr. Fauci tended to cite the same 60 to 70% estimate that most experts did. About a month ago, he began saying 70 to 75% in television interviews, and last week, in an interview with CNBC News, he said 75, 80, 85%. And 75 to 80-plus percent. In a telephone interview the next day, Dr. Fauci acknowledged that he had slowly but deliberately been moving the goalpost. He is doing so, he said, partly based on new science and partly on his gut feeling that the country is finally ready to hear what he really thinks. Hard as it may be to hear, he said he believes that it may take close to 90% immunity to bring the virus to a halt, almost as much as is needed to stop a measles outbreak. Dr. Fauci said that weeks ago, he had hesitated to publicly raise his estimate because many Americans seemed hesitant about vaccines, which they would need to accept almost universally in order for the country to achieve herd immunity. Here is the tweet from the New York Times account. And a few more. Here is the Vox official Twitter account on March 2nd, 2020. Oh, and face masks, you can pass on them. Masks are only useful if you have a respiratory infection already and want to limit the risk of spreading, or if you're working at a hospital in direct contact with people who have respiratory illness. And the World Health Organization has now come out in opposition to lockdowns. USA Today, World Health Organization discourages lockdowns as U.S. hospitalizations continue to climb. 11 states set record for new COVID-19 cases. So again, just because there's a terrible virus does not mean that lockdowns are justified. We in the World Health Organization do not advocate lockdowns as the primary means of control of this virus, Nabarro told The Speculator. Nabarro said lockdowns can only be justified to buy you time to reorganize, regroup, rebalance your resources, protect your health workers who are exhausted, but by and large, we'd rather not do it. Total numbers of deaths, 94% of the deaths are of people who had underlying medical conditions, including things like diabetes, the flu, heart failure. Only 6% of deaths are due to COVID-19 solely. That is from the Center for Disease Control. They also are counting deaths of people that just have it, even if it's not at all a primary cause of death. The Toronto Public Health official Twitter account said, individuals who have died with COVID-19 COVID-19, but not as a result of COVID-19, are included in the case counts for COVID-19 deaths in Toronto, and that is the case pretty much everywhere you look. Here is the U.S. Surgeon General official Twitter account. Seriously, people, stop buying masks. They are not effective in preventing general public from catching hashtag coronavirus, but if healthcare providers can't get them to care for sick patients, it puts them and our communities at risk. Were they lying to us then? Are they lying to us now? No one knows. The best way to protect yourself and your community is with everyday preventative actions like staying home when you are sick and washing your hands with soap and water. Why has this gone out the window? Originally, it was everyone needs to wear gloves. You gotta wear gloves and don't touch your face, don't touch your eyes, your nose, or your mouth. But now, this is not even being talked about. To help slow the spread of respiratory illness, get your hashtag flu shots. Flu patients equal more resources for COVID-19. There was also an NBC News spent weeks reporting on a contributor's journey battling coronavirus, but he never had it. These are just constant lies that they enter into the public consciousness, so they're just not a trustworthy method of acquiring information about the virus. Here is the World Health Organization's official Twitter account, January 14th. Preliminary investigations conducted by the Chinese authorities have found no clear evidence of human-to-human transmission of the novel hashtag coronavirus 2019 nCoV identified in hashtag Wuhan hashtag China. So, again, this is not to say that there is no virus or, you know, people aren't getting sick and it should just be taken as a joke. It is to say that it is being used as a justification for increased government measures, which are unjustified. I mean, look, terrorism exists, but that doesn't justify the war on terror or the lies told about Iraq and Afghanistan and Iran and Syria and Libya and everywhere else. I'll end with this quote from a PhD from Harvard and Columbia University, Thomas E. Woods Jr., referring to this Kentucky graph, which shows different steps that the state government in Kentucky has taken, from mask mandates to extending the mandates. He says, if this graph showed the opposite results, the mask voodoo people would be shoving it in our faces. Since it looks like this, they cry about how unfair it is. No data changes their mind. Thank you for watching Keith Knight. Don't tread on anyone.